Live from New York City, it's the Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. We have a lot to share. Glad to have you on board. You can watch today's show by going to Progressive Raider Network Facebook. Also, a lot of people travel, especially this time of year, and they ask, if I'm not near my land-based station, right, my radio or computer, what can I do? Good news. You can listen over any portable device, a landline, a cell phone, a computer. Let me give you the numbers. Listen live at this number, Monday to Friday, noon to 1 Eastern Standard Time, 712-775-6850. Again, 712-775-6850. Today, the latest on health and healing. A really good story I read in a scientific journal I'm going to report in a few moments on how, once again, if you've been eating your vegetables, you're preventing cancer and you're creating a very healthy gut. Also, I'm going to do an audio clip. And I believe it's time that we did a documentary series on this. Women in prison for long periods of time when all they were doing was defending themselves against their attackers. And it's a huge number. In fact, they're the largest single increase in the prison population. Not men, women. So we're going to deal with that. And then I'd like your feedback on that. Also, we have plenty of money for the military-industrial spy complex, but nothing to help the people who need it in inner cities, in public schools that need brought back up to a higher standard, and even kids don't have textbooks. Why? Robert Reich will discuss that. Also today, I want to deal with climate change, because we've had climate change for more than a century, and we've been living either in a hubris state of mind where we're indifferent to the facts, or we just don't believe it could impact us individually, or we're in denial that it exists at all. Any one of those, but it all adds up to the same thing. We are not addressing it. Yesterday I had on, a person was on last week talking about geoengineering. And he's an extraordinarily articulate person, good scientific credentials. He doesn't exaggerate. We had him on last night. It was an extraordinarily powerful hour. And because many of our listeners want to hear him but don't have access to the internet, I'll be playing him the full hour this Friday on all of the stations around the country that syndicate this program, including our sister station in New York City, WBAI. I think you'll find Dame Wigington extraordinarily interesting. But it's what he's saying is happening now. And boy, did he push the timetable up for the inability of whole nations not to be able to feed themselves. Wow. You'll hear him and justification of that. I'm not, and you'll hear me also say that those are his opinions. I'm not as fatalistic. I'm optimistic, but even my most optimistic timetable is starting now with all that's happening around the world, and we reviewed everything happening around the world that the average American's clueless about. We have about 3 years before you start seeing the hottest day we've ever had become the new norm. The rainiest day, the worst hurricane, the new norm. Well, how exactly are we supposed to adapt to that, as we are not a nation that likes to change personally? And so we discuss that. You won't want to miss that Friday show if you missed last night. And then finally, I've been meaning to put on a person. Her Her name is Candace Owens, and she has some specific statements to the left. Now, it's not that I agree or disagree with her. She's articulate, she's intelligent, and I also feel that she is wrong on great many points. But I'm not one of those people who believe that because you disagree with someone that you have to be slandering them or yelling and screaming. That doesn't resolve anything. So what I'm going to do is this. I'm going to play a clip of hers, and you can agree or disagree, in part or whole, but then I'm going to offer her positive advice of how to seek the truth from sources other than the extraordinarily biased and wrongful discussion and talking points that are used on the right, as I have on the left. And then you'll have a chance to see what I consider the single most important issues we, all of us, should be dealing with as a society. That's coming. But we start with the latest on health and healing. And the first thing we're dealing with is from the Francis Crick Institute. And it just released a statement today. And we scour the world scientific literature for the best things that can help our health. And this is about compounds that you've heard me discuss in vegetables like kale and cabbage and broccoli that helped maintain our gut, but also prevent colon cancer, a major killing cancer in the United States. And in it, they found that there was a substance. You've heard me mention this, indole, I-N-D-O-L-E, 3-carbinol, or I-3-C. And that you get when you eat cabbage or broccoli sprouts, and it's been shown to prevent colon inflammation and colon cancer by activating a protein, which is an anal hydrocarbon receptor, or AHR. But beyond that, when you eat something like sauerkraut or beets or kale or, let's say, mustard, and radishes, that goes into the gut and creates a very good anti-inflammatory probiotic enhancement of the milieu in the gut. It's simply good for digestion, good for your immune system, good for your health. And so those of you who switch from a standard American diet, which promotes disease, that there is no benefit to that diet, every single study in the scientific literature, if you were here in my office right now, in the back office, in the front office, in the middle office, you'll see scholars. You'll see citizen journalists. And they're all studying the best scientific literature. And not a single study shows that eating hot dogs and hamburgers and pizzas and colas are good for you. To the contrary, they show they cause disease. And they cause disease by causing oxidative stress. So we want to prevent colon cancer. We want you not to get sick. Quote, "Seeing the profound effect of diet on gut inflammation and colon cancer was very striking," said Dr. Gita Stockinger, the group leader at the Francis Crick program. And that was at the University of Bath in the United Kingdom. Interesting because I remember over 40 years ago, going to Great Britain and interviewing 3 individuals. And one of the most powerful presentations I've heard was from the first professor of nutrition at a university in Europe. And he said, "Until such time that we can appreciate how powerful it is to eat a high roughage diet close to its origin without processing, like eating whole grains, eating whole nuts and seeds, eating as nature provided, we will still continue to suffer from diseases of our own ignorance." He was right. Then I went out into the country and I interviewed Dr. Cleave, and he was the one who helped find why all the British soldiers were coming down with gastrointestinal disturbances and muscle weakness and fatigue because they weren't eating fresh fruits and vegetables. So he got the Royal Navy to do more port calls in the Caribbean to pick up more fruits and vegetables and see that the people on the ships ate a healthier diet. He was responsible for that. He also said that the people had gotten away from a natural diet. And then Dr. John Yuckin was the other professor. And then Dennis Burkitt of Burkitt's Lymphoma. He had been in East Africa. He had been in over 69 small East African hospitals. He said it was so rare to see diverticulitis, so rare to have a heart attack or a stroke, so rare that someone would die of colon cancer that when it happened, they would a lot of doctors go and examine that, see what was going on. And he also said, get more fiber. Now, there's a notion food is medicine. And what we're seeing now in diabetics, according to the University of Rajshahi in Bangladesh, brand new study, that there is an exotic herb, a bush, phalsa, P-H-A-L-S-A, and it's used in Ayurvedic medicine, but they're finding it is a phenomenal anti-diabetic, antibacterial properties. It's very beneficial. Now, they're using it there, helping people who are diabetic. It also has a very strong stem bark, and it's used to as an antibacterial agent as well. So, one more thing in order to use, and let me spell it again, P-H-A-L-S-A. It's a bark, and then you get the extract from it. And then you take that if you have diabetes or high blood sugar or if your body weight is too high, and it can help you. It also helps you lower cholesterol, triglycerides, and the very low-density lipoproteins, and all that is good for you. So we want to help people with disease, and those are some of the ways we're doing it, bring you the latest studies from around the world. Also, we have eating breakfast. This is a new one. This is from the University of Bath. Eating breakfast burns more carbs during exercise and accelerates metabolism for the next meal. So I always suggest this. Instead of having your standard breakfast, let's do the following. Let's have an energy breakfast. An energy breakfast is one that helps the body. Now, let's say you want to go out for a workout. Good. Walking, biking, whatever you're doing. First, have the following. Have a glass of beet juice. The beets will provide for nitric oxide. That allows a greater flow of blood and a better spacing of the red blood cells so they're less able to aggregate or clump together, which could cause a clot and hence cause a stroke or an ischemic or cardiac event, heart attack or stroke. Just that one glass of beet, B-E-E-T, beet juice. Now, in the beet juice, put 1 tablespoon of ginger juice and 1 table of lemon juice. Now you got an ideal way of alkalizing the body, helping reduce pain in the joints, the musculature. It also is great for your brain. It's good for digestion. It's detoxifying. It's chelating. It's terrific. Now let's protect our heart. Let's help eliminate the certainty in some people of a stroke or a heart attack or the possibility in others. Let's take some coenzyme Q10, 200 milligrams ubiquinol, throw it in. Vitamin E, 200 units of tocotrienols and 200 units of tocopherols, throw it in. Now let's put in L-carnitine, not carnosine, carnitine, which allows more oxygen and more nutrition to get into the heart, which means more combustion of ATP, adenosine triphosphate, meaning you're putting fuel into the fire, causing energy. The energy that your heart needs, your muscles need, your brain needs. So L-carnitine, then NAD, and let's put 1,000 milligrams of carnitine, and let's also put 800 milligrams of magnesium, which allows more even, especially during exercise, more even heart beating, especially those of you who have AFib, because if you take magnesium and L-carnitine together, along with ajuna, and some herbs, you can actually overcome AFib. And if your doctor doesn't know that, I'll be happy to give an article that I'm writing right now. I'm going to post it shortly on how to, a natural approach to AFib and preventing heart attacks and strokes. So we got vitamin E, coenzyme Q10, now 40,000 heat units, which is one capsule of a cayenne pepper. That really thins the blood, helps turn off pain, is terrific for your system, and then you can also add in there as a ginkgo biloba, and which ginkgo would be about 100 to 200 milligrams. So now you're ready to start your day. Now when you come back, from your workout, you've created some free radicals. It's great that you worked out, but the byproduct of exercise is free radicals. So now have some black cumin seed oil. Black cumin seed oil is simply the greatest healing oil we've yet to discover. But you don't want to drink that straight. It's a little too strong. I would dilute it in the smoothie. Now, in that smoothie, I would put whatever powders you use each day and some fresh berries and a scoop of coconut oil and a scoop of flaxseed oil and a handful of walnuts or walnut butter and a scoop of protein from vegetables, split pea, brown rice, hemp. They're all terrific. Or non-GMO soy. Now you've got a breakfast. Now you've got something after a workout that will create satiety or staying value from breakfast to lunch. And that's what I want to see. Now, also, it's found that you're from the University of Texas, a report just out today, that when it comes to shedding pounds, it pays to think big. And that's according to the University of Texas Health Science Center at Houston. And the study, in collaboration with the American Cancer Society, focused on Americans looking to slim down and found that those who lost more than a fifth of their body weight more than doubled their likelihood of good metabolic health compared to those who only lost a relatively small amount. So they're saying, quote, if you're overweight or obese, even losing just a little is better than none. But the rewards appear to be greater for those who manage to lose more. The evidence suggests that 5 to 10% weight loss for those with excess weight is beneficial for one's health. A higher level could potentially lead to lower cardiometabolic risk. That's according to Dr. Greg Nell, the study's lead author. Now, I'll give you an example of that. And they used 7,670 adults participating in the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey for that. You should measure your waist because the circumference of your waist size is big. Add in your blood sugar, your fasting blood sugar when you get up in the morning, and your cholesterol levels, and that will determine your metabolic health. I remember once, and that will lower your risk or increase your risk, depending upon if you keep the weight or go up or lose and go down, it will affect stroke and diabetes and heart disease, the three most lethal health problems right now. Now, I was once given a call, and Sharon, our archivist, for I guess a quarter century, said, and doing a great job, by the way, she said, there's a gentleman on the line who says, he's got an absolute emergency, and I was just walking out the door to run to the airport. And so I said, okay, I've got just a second because I can't miss my flight. And I went back in, and he said, I'm in a terribly difficult situation. My doctor says if I have an operation, there's a 95% chance I'll die on the operating table. If I don't have it, there's a 100% chance I'll die very shortly. I said, what's the problem? He said, I've end-stage congestive heart failure. I said, all right, well, there are things you can do. He says, I'm 747 pounds. I also have very high blood sugar, very high cholesterol, very high. I'm diabetic. I'm arthritic. I'm depressed, da-da-da. I said, well, when was all this supposed to take place? He said, today. I said, well, nice that you gave me some time to work with you. You know, you're going to supposed to get this operation today, and I'm just running out the door. So what I did was I said, I'll call you from the airport. And I did. And I gave him some instructions of what to do immediately. And so the doctor was not happy about this, needless to say. No one was happy about it. But to bring all of his markers down. So I gave him a protocol, and then I said, is there anyone who can go get you this stuff? Well, there wasn't. So I had to find someone who could take everything to him over in Brooklyn. Then he didn't have the operation, but it was a die if you do and a die if you don't situation. And so the key was getting the weight down. And when you're 737 pounds and you're over 55, you die. But he didn't. And for the first time, he said in his adult life, you might have seen him. He was that big guy in The Bronx Tale, Robert De Niro film. In any case, he would go right across the street to where there was a health food store and get his wheatgrass juice. And then I said, one little wheatgrass juice is not going to do anything. I mean, I had him on like 16. I won't go through what I had him on because I went in thinking that that's what they should take. Everything is individualized. But anyhow, I had him on a lot of juices, lots of things, but nothing in the way of food except salads. He could eat all the salads he'd want, but not anything he'd ever was used to eating. Well, what happened was, over the next several months, he lost weight to the point where the protocol for his heart reversed his congestive heart failure. In fact, there's someone listening right now, I'll bet, who... And here's the irony. This person just retired from running a major division of a major New York hospital. And this is not the first time that he called when he was in the emergency room in critical care. It was the third time. So he chooses, unlike Fred Fish or others, he chooses not to learn. It's too bad I couldn't have all the audience call him and say, come on, buddy, you can do it. Just like in the marathon, when you're at the 18th mile and you're thinking, oh, God, why'd I do this? And the people on the sidelines say, you can do it. And then suddenly you don't want to let them down and you don't want to let yourself down and everyone else that believed you could do it, and you get back in. But this fella, he's not the wisest person when it comes to his health. And he had congestive heart failure in stage. They didn't think he'd make it through the night. Here I am at 2 o'clock in the morning giving him a protocol, a close relative was getting him the stuff, and he got through the night, got through the next day, got him out of harm's way, overcame the congestive heart failure, and then I said, give yourself at least 3 months now to detox. I can't do that. I've got too many responsibilities. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, you're talking about responsibilities of helping people who, A, don't like you, and B, use you, and C, you need to save people, and you can't save yourself. Now, what's possibly going to go wrong with this scenario? And here you are, 3 separate times I've had to bail you out, only because you're a friend. Don't press it. There may not be an opportunity for a 4th. You can't keep coming up to the... You can't be Christopher Walken your whole damn life. That's what he is. Where he put... Remember the last scene of The Deer Hunter where Christopher Walken, one of the most iconic scenes in a movie where he's drugged out in a Vietnam bar and he's spinning the wheel. There's money on the table to see if he'll blow his brains out and click. It doesn't happen that day, but it's going to happen. So for those of you who think that you have the time, you don't. The Buddha said the biggest mistake you make is thinking you have time. Nobody has time. Nobody has time. We fool ourselves in thinking, I got all the time I need. Not today. I got too many responsibilities. Well, here's some common sense. With all your responsibilities and all your must-dos and all the people you must do everything for, including wiping their ass, because why should they dirty their hands? You're more than willing to do it, right? Isn't that part of that mindset you got? What's going to happen when you die? Who's going to be responsible for them? Them? Doesn't matter then, does it? Life goes on. And for those of you who somehow think that you're so essential to your work and to your family, you're not. You're not. We had a person named Maimonides, a great physician, a rabbi, a great healer. He died. Spinoza died. Yeah, they all, everyone, Gandhi died. Life goes on. So why don't we pay attention to how valuable our life is, our life energy in the moment we have, and respect it? Fred Fisher, in that moment, decided to, and he didn't turn back. 2 years later, he had lost 346 pounds. Now, here's tying it into the article I just shared with you. The more weight he lost, the better his biochemistry became, the more his markers changed. So, in effect, we began to reverse his aging at the biological level. And there are studies you can do to tell what is your biological age, because that's the only age that matters. Your chronological age is irrelevant. It's your biological age that's going to determine whether you're going to live a longer life and healthier or a sick life, in short. Fred went on to live another 25 years. By every single metric, he should never have lived that long. but he lost the weight. He stuck to it. He motivated hundreds, if not thousands, of people. He'd sit on a stoop of his brownstone over in Brooklyn, and everybody knew him as an actor, but they also knew that he lost all this weight, and he was healthy, and he'd walk up and down the neighborhood with little barbells in his hand because he wanted to, you know, build up his upper back and his muscle, and he did. A phenomenal teacher, wonderful human being, greatest respect for him. And we kept in touch over the years. And so it just goes to show, if you're given a second chance, or a third, or a fourth, take advantage of it. Do the right thing. Do it for you. There's a moment in life where we all have to, like it or not, we all have just to drop all the balls that we're juggling, every single one, and then decide which ones should we put back up and which ones should we just let them go. If you keep trying to juggle every ball and be responsible for everyone else and how they feel and what's important in their life, where is the room for you to grow, to be free, to thrive in your intellect, your creativity, your spirituality? It's not. And finally, this was interesting, another study that cannabis risk to relieving intestinal inflammation explained, University of Massachusetts, and it talked about, and this was published in the Journal of Clinical Investigations, how people who had intestinal problems, all forms of intestinal problems, when they used cannabis, the anti-inflammatory part of the cannabis was able to turn off inflammation. Well, if you have colitis, diverticulitis, spastic colon, then anything that can turn off that inflammation could be a lifesaver. So let's look at the scientific literature. 22,000 studies on cannabis. Isn't it time that we had a national referendum to say no more laws that prevent anyone from using drugs? Abolish the entire war on drugs. Get proper clinical treatment centers in every town and city in the United States. Let's approach this not as if people have committed a crime, but rather people need some help. Let's help them, not punish them. And let's then let the oils, the cannabinoids, be used as a primary tool for stroke, cancers, inflammation, all the wonderful things it can do. I'm Gary Nall. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Nice to have you with us, everyone. By the way, just as a aside, this major road trip I'm taking, filming two major documentaries, one on poverty called Friend, Can You Spare a Dime? And the other one on saving our planet, because we're losing our planet. We're not losing the planet. We're losing the capacity to be living in balance with the different environmental factors. It'll start right after the 10th of September. So there'll be some people who have asked they'd like to join us on various aspects of the trip. Those who want to, just give us the information. You have to be physically healthy, because this is not about being on a trip where I'm going to be giving you protocols. This is not what that's about. We've had people call, oh, I want to join Gary on his trip. I've got diabetes, blah, blah, blah. And then there, you know, he could help me. I can help you, yes, and I will, but not on the trip. The trip is strictly for filming, and it's a long day. And if you're not used to long days and hard work, this would not be for you. But if you are, and seeing the raw, honest side of nature and people, then it'll be interesting. For everyone else, you'll see the results probably within the next 9 months. This was from The Guardian. Whoa. Quote, don't blame wildfires on climate change. It's environmentalist fault, says U.S. Interior Secretary Zinke. That's right. Ryan Zinke blames environmentalists for the devastation in California and calls for an increase in logging. Hard to imagine, but that's what he's saying. In point of fact, right now we have more fires in California than I've ever seen in the history of California. And three of the worst fires in history are occurring right now as we speak. And no, it's not environmentalists causing these fires. It's our environmental policies, including logging. And we'll be dealing with this in an upcoming program. I now want to have you listen to a good short interview. It's not the shortest interview, but we'll go to about 7 minutes, about most women in prison are incarcerated for committing crimes in self-defense. Therefore, should women be put behind bars for defending themselves? Watch it and then call in at 888-874-4888 and share your opinion on it. Now, to the film.
1.5 million missing black men in America due to mass incarceration. But what you might not know is that the fastest growing prison population isn't men, it's women.
Many think of prisoners as perpetrators, but in many cases, they're also victims. A harrowing amount. The vast majority of women who are incarcerated are survivors of sexual abuse.
And it isn't uncommon to find survivors of violence who are serving sentences for fighting back against their abusers.
Dying at the hands of an intimate partner is sadly not uncommon for women, especially black women, who are 2 times more likely to be killed. Half of them after trying to leave the relationship. Should women be put behind bars for defending themselves? Recently, the case of Cyntoia Brown, a young woman who was sex trafficked as a child and found guilty of murdering her abuser, was popularized because of the vocal support of celebrities. But her case is not new, and there are many women like her in prisons all over the country. I met with Valerie Seeley, a domestic abuse survivor, to hear her personal story. Valerie served 17 years of a 19-year sentence for killing her abuser while trying to defend herself. She was released last year through clemency.
New Year's Day, I was fed up, and I said that I was leaving. I was on the phone waiting for my mother to pick up, and he attacked me. He tried to wrap the telephone cord around my neck. And I managed to get away from him, and I ran for the door, but I wasn't fast enough. And he caught me, and he slammed me up against the bathroom door, and he started choking me. And he was like, before I let you leave, I'll kill you. I can't breathe. I seen my life flashing in front of me. I knew that I was really gonna die. I was feeling for something to get him to turn loose my neck. And I hit him, and he let my neck go. And I looked down, I realized that it was actually a knife in my hand, and I dropped it. And that's when I seen the blood seeping through his fingers. And the last thing he said before he fell back was that, I'm sorry, I didn't mean for it to turn out this way. What led up to it, we have been arguing, and he had been attacking me. I went through the physical abuse, the emotional abuse. Every time I go to sleep, I would wake up and he would be standing over me to suffocate me, to wrap things around my neck. So I stopped sleeping. I wasn't eating. I was 73 pounds when I got locked up. I reached out for help. I talked to my pastor. I talked to my therapist. I called all the domestic violence hotlines. And all of them told me the same thing. We can't help you if you cannot get to us.
And did you call the police multiple times?
Yes.
What happened when you called the police?
Nothing. They seen this man's whole handprint around my neck. They didn't do nothing. The second time when they came and they seen it again, that's when they arrested him. But the judge gave him 7 days. What good was that? No matter which way I went, I wasn't getting the help. The system don't really work for us. They fail us.
In what way?
In no way.
Yeah.
None. They don't even have a self-defense law in New York State. So if you protect yourself, you're going to prison. You're going to prison, and that's the bottom line. And I feel that that's wrong.
Now you've been out for about...
almost a year.
What's next for you? Are you going to remain an advocate for women who are incarcerated?
Yeah, and... most definitely. Mm. I want to help them. It's still women sitting in prison behind bills. You know, they forget about us, but they're not forgetting about the men. Every time you turn around, it's the men this, the men that. When are y'all gonna think about the women too? I want women to know that there is help. And if I could direct them and I say one or two, I'll be happy.
Well, we're really glad that you're out. Thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story. Yep. Thank you.
Some of the loudest voices demanding reform in the criminal justice system are the women who have survived it. Donna Hilton is one of them, and she's dedicated her life to improving the system for women. We met at the Exodus Transitional Community Center, where a lot of work is being done to break down the flaws in mass incarceration.
Can you talk about the sexual assault to prison pipeline?
Abuse is trauma. That's usually why a woman or a girl is incarcerated. We know because it's just not addressed, and we feel like that's the response to it. Oh, just lock it up. Lock it up and it'll go away. We never have to deal with it again. And I'm not saying people don't need to be put into timeout. Absolutely. But incarceration has become the response to mental health. You can't run from these issues. We're like dogs chasing our tail because we're doing the same thing over and over, and it's exacerbating.
Can you talk a little bit about the policy changes that you are working on, especially when it comes to survivors of domestic violence who are incarcerated for fighting back against their abusers?
When I was inside, one of the policies that I worked on was the Domestic Violence Survivors Justice Act. And so we say that because it's a tongue twister, a DVSJA, because it's like, blah, blah, blah. We were trying to figure that out for a long time. Like, how do we break this down? Like, what do we call it? So it became that. And the bill is saying that if you can prove that abuse was a significant factor in your life, so it's not necessarily that you even have to be in prison for a domestic violence situation in the moment, but if it was a significant factor in your life to even get you to the point where you are in prison, if you can show that, then that's how the bill is able to help you. But we do have resistance. The belief was it would open the floodgates and everyone would just get out because everyone would say that, oh, they've been subjected to violence. No. That's not true. There's processes where, like, if you're applying for clemency, you have to put in an application. By the time you go through that strainer, like, you're okay if you made it. You know what I mean? To even get interviewed to go in front of.
So what are your thoughts? I'll share mine, but I'd like to hear yours first. On all the women in the United States who simply fought back when they were being assaulted, and they ended up in jail. Our current system is broken. Our entire penal system is broken. It's there purely for punishment and for profit. It should be there for neither. It should be there for rehabilitation and providing the kind of mindset that allows a person to understand what caused their incarceration and give them a chance out. And I believe that at least 40% of all people in prison shouldn't be there under any circumstances. Much better ways, if someone has committed a crime, depending upon the nature of the crime, to give them community service and let them work within the community. And by the way, on that subject, when you look at San Francisco and you look at Los Angeles, you're looking at compounding problems. It's not just that a person is poor and homeless. Frequently, then, they are depressed. They're using drugs to alleviate their psychic pain. And then in now come the gangs. And the gangs are charging these people rent. So if you can't pay the rent, you get thrown out or beaten up. Women are frequently forced into selling sex. It was bad enough that they had a home, had a family, or had something that provided quality of life, and now they're without all that, and now they're being additionally abused. Nothing's being done against these gangs, nor anything to help them. What's one simple solution? Now, this is a simple one. Why don't you begin to hire all of the people you can who are homeless? Let's just start with San Francisco as an example and give them $15 an hour and then convert federal, state, and local empty spaces into affordable living and for them free living for families, single men, single women. So now they have a place to stay, so not in a tent or out on the street. You're providing them with mental health, counseling to help them get a sense of their integrity and self-esteem back. You're giving them some money for work they're doing, and the work they do is clean up the city. So, A, you're cleaning up the city. That's good. And because your average citizen walking down the street is not going to clean it up. You're giving them an income they can start to save and have some money to spend on things they need, and you're giving them mental health counseling. Just a suggestion. But they haven't tried that yet. I think they're hiring a few people for $10 an hour to clean up the city. Far more can be done. Now, and again, I'm waiting on calls. If you have a response to women who have been incarcerated and shouldn't be there because of fighting back, let me know. I'd like to hear what we have. And we have one person on the line now. Let's go over and say hello to Max Lena in California.
Yes, Dr. Nall, good morning. I heard that clip and I started sobbing, still shaking, because I watched my father beat up my mother from the time I was a little girl, and nothing was ever done to help my mother. And I wouldn't know where to begin to help women to stay out of that kind of violence to protect them. I would really love to help.
Okay, Max Lena, why don't we try this? We can't undo what has been done, the violence that your mother experienced by your father. But what we can do is use that to then start a campaign at the local level and where you have some control, where you begin to print out articles and share them with people about how common is violence against women, and then try to get either church groups or the city council to set aside a place where women who are being abused in any way can go to and have a safe place to stay. Meaning when they walk in that door, the violence that has been brought against them will not be able to enter that door. Because right now they don't have any place to go. If they don't have friends or family, they don't have any place to go. And they go out on the street. So this way they're given a safe haven, and then they can have legal representation, psychological representation to help them overcome the trauma they've suffered. That's the first step. That's something that can be done. If people like yourself, who have been involved as a spectator to violence and hence feeling that trauma yourself and carrying that negative energy with you, where you can start to do something constructive. All right? Thank you for your call. Now I'm going to play a clip from Robert Reich on all the money in the world for the military-industrial complex and both the Democrats and Republicans together. The corporate liberal, corporate conservative community in Washington passed this bill without any limitation, but not a penny for the de-ghettoization of America or to feed hungry children or to help homeless children. Shows you about the politicians' priorities. Watch this, please.
As Trump stokes tensions around the world, he's adding fuel to the fire by demanding even more Pentagon spending. It's a dangerous military buildup intended to underwrite endless wars and enrich defense contractors while draining money from investments in the American people. President Dwight D. Eisenhower once noted, "Every gun that's made, every warship launched, every rocket fired signifies, in the final sense, a theft from those who hunger and are not fed, those who are cold and are not clothed." Eisenhower was a Republican and a former general who helped win World War II for the Allies, and yet he understood America's true priorities. But Washington, and especially Trump, have lost sight of these basic trade-offs. Since 2001, the Pentagon budget has soared from $456 billion in today's dollars to $700 billion, including the costs of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and other national security expenses. All told, When you include spending on the military and war, veterans, benefits, and homeland security, military-related spending now eats up 67% of all federal discretionary spending. According to the 2018 Military Balance Report by the International Institute of Strategic Studies, the United States already spends more on the military than the next 10 nations combined. Even if the Pentagon budget were cut in half, the United States would still outspend China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea combined. The military budget has become bloated with waste and abuse. According to the Pentagon's own internal figures, the department could save at least $125 billion by reducing operational overhead. Out-of-control defense contractors also drive up spending. In coming years, cost overruns alone are projected to reach an estimated $484 billion. Despite all this, some still argue that military spending is necessary to support good-paying jobs and economic growth in America. Baloney. America would be much better served by a jobs program that invested in things we really need, like modern roads and highways, better school facilities, public parks, water and sewer systems, and clean energy, not weapon systems. The biggest reason for increases in Pentagon spending is the incredible clout of the military-industrial complex, Eisenhower's term. Every year, defense contractors spend millions of dollars on lobbying and campaign contributions to keep federal dollars flowing their way. More than 80% of top Pentagon officials have worked for the defense industry at some point in their careers, and many who are in government now will go back to work in the defense industry. Since taking office, Trump has increased military spending by more than $200 billion. Let's take a second to look at how else that $200 billion could be spent. We could, for example, offer free public colleges and universities, as proposed by Bernie Sanders, and fund the Children's Health Insurance Program, and expand broadband internet access to rural America, and meet the growing needs for low-income housing, providing safe living conditions for families and the elderly, and help repair the physical devastation in Puerto Rico after Hurricane Maria. Spending more on bombs and military machinery funnels money away from the American people and into wars. It's time to rein in Pentagon spending and Trump's endless war machine and demand investment in America.
And I would agree with that. I'm going to do this. I don't have the time to both play you Candace Owens' comments about walking away from the what she calls the Democrat plantation and the African-American community in particular, because she states, and you could agree or disagree, that the Democrats, starting with Hillary and Bill Clinton, have betrayed the black community. They took it for granted that it was in their pocket. And every campaign cycle, they made promises, as well as Barack Obama, what they were going to do for African-Americans, and they didn't. And now they're looking and saying, you didn't protect us, so we're going over to Trump. Big mistake. First of all, because Trump hasn't helped anyone except those who are closest to him and the corporations that he is in alignment with. He hasn't helped the average American. I will deal with that on an upcoming program showing how we actually have 22% unemployment, not 4%. And the gross domestic product, that's the measure of all items sold in America, you're not adding in how much that is just the accumulation of additional debt. And it's massive. So how can debt suddenly be an asset? It can only be considered an asset to that portion of the debt, the equity that goes beyond your debt. So if you buy a house for $100,000 and your mortgage is $100,000, you don't own the house. The house is owned by someone who gave you the $100,000. If your house is worth $300,000 and you have $100,000, you have a $200,000 equity. That is your equity. And unfortunately, people weren't told that they shouldn't be cashing in the equity on their homes. And as a result, millions of Americans thought that, I've got an ATM machine in my house. Not today. People are a little wiser, but credit card debt is terrific. It's so high. So what are some progressive ideals for Candace Owens to look at? And And Candace, I don't come at you with any anger or animus because you support this president or the Republicans. That's your business. That's your right. But you're a highly articulate, intelligent person who's very charismatic, and I believe that if you would look for the truth in what you're doing and see how, just as you were looking for the truth as a Democrat and a liberal, and you didn't see it and you left, but you went in the other, you went in the other door. I'm asking people to look for the truth and then step away from the Democrat or Republican position and go independent and then see what is the truth. Here are some issues that I believe you should look into. These are progressive issues. First and foremost, reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act to again separate savings and loan banking from speculative investment banking. And by the way, you want a horror story? Engage in some scholarship. The scholarship is that every single penny any American puts into any regular bank in the United States is no longer their money. Legally, it's called the bail-in. Now that is considered an investment in the bank, and that means that if a bank failed, you would not be able to have the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, bail you out. A, they couldn't do it in any case. They don't have the money. But B, because that is now a private arrangement, an investment you've made, and hence not the historical savings account that you'll be bailed out of. So you're going to lose everything. So the next bank failure, when it comes, and it will, it'll be in the trillions of dollars. The banks will get bailed out because every single penny in their accounts will be frozen. They'll be given micro shares in the bank, but they're not even first creditors. They're last creditors. So take a look at the truth of our banking system. The very people that the Republicans and your party support, the Wall Street people, and look to see how mercenary they have engaged in this capitalist system. That's not the same as free market. That's controlling the market. That is using debt and economic and political leverage to create monopolies where they have no competition. Then ban trading in commodities that are necessary to life, such as ban where people cannot unduly move the price of food and fuel and water. Now, we should not have to go hungry because we can't afford what is food because someone has speculated on it and has forced the price of food up beyond our capacity to be able to feed ourselves. But right now, that's exactly what is happening. So when you look at this perspective as a poor person, you can use your mantra and the right's mantra, well, pull yourself up by your bootstraps. That's nonsense. That's always been nonsense, because for every person who was able to pull themselves up, I'll show you 100,000 kids that died making 15 cents a day, working 12-hour days in toxic environments, and their labor was exploited by those that you support that believed in the marketplace will dictate. The marketplace has never been honest and ethical. It was only when the unions, whether it was John L. Lewis or Gompers or any of the other George Meany, and it was only when the unions in the 1940s and 50s began to insist upon collective bargaining and creating healthier environments for working, being paid overtime, and equality in payment, that's when our standard of life increased. And had it not been for the unions, we would still be living in abject poverty, as many people were for over 200 years prior to that. Also, declare a moratorium on home foreclosures. People are stuck in this trap where they buy something they shouldn't have bought. They're buying into a dream that becomes a nightmare. And now, when they miss a payment, all their credit card expenses increase, their debt, and without their knowledge, and now there's debtors' prisons, and frequently they can't walk away. Even if they're out of a house, they're still legally owing the mortgage. And that's not right. So we should have a moratorium that no one who can't afford to pay a mortgage should be thrown out of the house. They should be renegotiated to 15% of whatever income they do have. So even a person on welfare could still have a domicile place to live. Also, stop the Federal Reserve from giving any more no-interest loans to banks and corporations. Isn't it interesting? You believe in capitalism, and the only capitalism we see today is not ethical capitalism, but rather it is proprietary and it is vulture capitalism, the worst type that exploits by people who are very rich, don't need the money, but want the power that comes with the money. If someone is that needing a power, they're not a normal person. They're manifesting sociopathic and psychopathic and gross insecurity needs. They need help, not to be put into a position of being emulated. And also, isn't it interesting, you don't believe in socialism, but your public education is socialism. The police and fire are socialism. The Coast Guard is socialism. If there's a storm, FEMA is socialism. Every society in the world has some form of socialism. I will deal with on another upcoming program the strengths and weaknesses of it and being more honest about what it really is. But why is it that when the banks and the corporations fail, socialism is exactly what bails them out? We, the people who've suffered the greatest, have to bail out these people, and those people privatize their profits and socialize their losses. Clearly, you are smart enough, Candace, to do your homework to realize that the right, the Republicans, this president, have lied to you. The left lied to you. They're pathological liars. The right, they're double-down pathological liars. So we shouldn't be going from one to the other, left to right, right to left. We should be withdrawing and looking at true, humane, and proper addressing of these issues. Now, on tomorrow's program, I will continue and share other issues that neither the right nor the left have dealt with. Everything I just mentioned, Glass-Steagall, those were the Clintons. And for those of you who say you shouldn't be criticizing the Clintons, okay, tomorrow I'll address that. Do you support Hillary Clinton? Do you support Bill Clinton? If you do, then you have to support what they've done. Oh, you mean you just metaphorically support them, ethereally support them? No. If you vote for them, then you're saying to the world, I'm for them. Do you really want to know what they've done? Because I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to continue telling you, until you do your own homework, until scholarship is once again a part of what precedes and is the foundation of any discussion. So we're not here to attack you or tear you down. We're here to encourage you to use your resources to see that you are in a swamp and everything you're doing is supporting people coming into that Republican and conservative swamp with this president until you no longer recognize where you're at. My hope is that you will look at what we're suggesting, do your own independent homework and scholarship, and realize you've made a mistake. And there's no problem making mistakes. We all make mistakes. Apologize and then become an independent. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for watching and listening. Have a nice day.